Welcome to Hoop du Jour with me, Peter Vesey, presented by the National Basketball Retired Players Association.
So here I am again, Hoop du Jour. Hoop du Jour with Spencer Haywood, who when he was a Knick, once chased me down from one locker room in the hallway to the other locker room, and I disappeared. I told him, I said, all you're going to see is ass and elbows, because I'm not going to let you catch me.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Well,
was I hard on you?
You were hard on me, yeah, really. you know, Pete, come on.
You know, Spencer.
It was part of the journey, you know, and you were doing your job, but, you know, I was just upset. And then I saw you.
I'm shocked you do this interview with me, truthfully.
I'm good.
No, I know you're good, and we've been good for a while, but yeah. I was tough on you.
Yeah, but that's part of the growth and part of being human. And I remember another time I was going to get you was we were going into this restaurant. What's the name of it?
Allen's.
And Iman said,
I don't remember.
Okay. Iman said, you can't do that. He's press. I said, but it's Pete Vesey. I can get him.
And he's not, and there's nobody around to
nobody
help
around. Yeah.
So that was our hangout in those days for both of us. Because I knew the owner and I knew the son. I used to hang out with the son. I was engaged to my wife at that time.
Okay.
My engaged to the woman I married, and you had Iman, and I couldn't take my eyes off Iman. And my ex was pissed off, you know.
Okay.
She's now my ex, you know.
Part of New York, you know how we were in New York.
No, exactly.
Did you ever go over to Leviticus or any of those clubs?
No, I wasn't a club guy except Studio 54.
Well, you know. We don't want to talk too much about.
Well,
studio.
Yeah, we do. So,
but
I was there. I knew what was happening.
Yes.
And you know, I had my bachelor party at Studio 54.
Okay.
Julius Erving threw it for me.
Oh wow.
And I remember calling up my wife to be, and I was crying. I was like, I was like 30. I was 30 something at the time. It was my second marriage, and I was crying. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know. She said, all right. So what's the problem? I said, you know, I'm here at Studio 54, and I said I must have lost it, because even the guys are not asking me to dance.
Because you know they would. Yes.
So I said,
this is Studio 54 stuff. I mean, for young people.
So I figured, what the hell happened to me? Damn. Anyway, there was a lot happening.
A lot of good stuff happened there, but it's also some bad stuff. But
is that where your startup with drugs began?
No,
in that environment.
It was that environment. But my drug, up until when I got with the Lakers, was I loved to smoke marijuana. So that was my calm.
So you'd be legal today. Yeah,
I'll be legal today. But I mean, I did a little blow, but I mean, it just wasn't a little blow, mean a little coke.
Yeah, you don't have to explain to those people. Okay. If they don't get it, they don't get it.
They don't get it, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it was not like my thing. But when I got with the Lakers is when I went to one of those Hollywood parties, and everybody in there was doing this new thing. And the new thing at that time in 1980 was freebase. So, I mean, not knowing that I'm from a long line of addictive people in my family.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I hit that pipe and I watched my life, my marriage, my career just melt down to nothing. But Iman stayed with me and stayed supportive and was with me through. She took me to the first time I ever went to a psychiatrist, you know. So I'm in there and I'm trying to figure out, did you see a psychiatrist in Africa? So I was blaming her, you know, like. And so when I got inside, we started talking about my family. And he says, well, you know, has anybody in your family had problems? This is after the Lakers and after my career finished. I said, well, yeah, my grandfather was drunk. My grandmother was drunk. My mother didn't touch anything, but I've also lost, at that time, I hadn't lost two of my brothers, but I...
You had nine brothers and sisters?
Yeah, so I've lost four of my brothers and sisters to alcoholism. And we were still in denial, like, you know, they died of a enlarged heart or gout or whatever. But then I started seeing what I needed to do about my life. And then I started getting addicted to going to the psychologist and the psychiatrist.
Well, Spencer, I always believe we all have one addiction or another.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And if one is cured.
Yes.
You might really go to another one, and it might be positive, but it's true.
It was the positive.
No, but it's true.
Yeah, and I did that, and Pete, and also, I spent a lot of time in AA meetings. For some reason, I'm always listening to people talk about how it was and how they felt. So you know, so you get a chance to say, you know, I wasn't so bad. Listen, look at his stuff.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, I know I will never go back to that journey. So that's been my life. And from that experience, my young daughter, Shakira, she used to go to with my psychiatrist. And when I switched over to a female, she would go with me and she would sit in the lobby. And so as she was growing up, and I'm trying to figure out what.
How old is she then?
She's 32.
No, at that time.
No, she was eight.
Eight going with you and staying out in the lobby. Did she know what you were doing in there?
Yeah, she knew.
She knew. Okay.
And she was like, you know, talk to the doctor, and she was like, yeah, okay. This is, I think I want to be one like you, because I want to help people like my dad.
Holy
and so she went through high school, and then she went through college, and then she says, well, I want to go to medical school, and I want to, like, get better. And so she ended up being a psychiatrist. And so... she's so good that the NBA Players Association said, well, come on, work with us too. So she have a private practice in New York, and she's working with the NBA players.
Well, God bless. I mean, it's amazing how, yeah,
something good come out of something so bad. Because I got into bad shape, and the one guy that I used to sit when I was playing with the Lakers, and he had a seat on the sideline, he and his brother, Al Ross and Leonard.
Leonard Amato.
Yeah. So I would always say, fuck, Al, help me out. But I had been not so good with Al,
yeah.
And he was not my agent anymore. But and Kareem would always say, why don't you go talk to your guy, Al? And I was like, man. How do I go to Al after, you know, we had such a falling out? And
we'll get into that. People don't know who Al Ross is at this point.
People deep need to know who he is. But go ahead.
Exactly.
Do your thing.
No. So I'm interested in that. Mm-hmm. So Kareem is telling you to go and
because the team did not know. They knew what I was doing because I was like, I mean, I would come in and we watching film, and you know, denial is a real deep one. So, and for people in recovery, they always say, it's not a river in Egypt. So I understand that, but we were looking at the film and Pat was always orchestrating the film session. And I would like say, man, Magic put so much spin on my ball. You see, I can't catch it. It's Magic's fault.
So he was the assistant coach then?
Yes.
Okay.
So then we would like to say, well, Spence, you're not rebounding like you used to. I said, hey, it's not me. It's Kareem. The shot, the sky hook is coming off on the other side. I'm going on this side. So everybody was like sitting in the meetings like, oh, Spence.
Did you know that you were doing what you were doing? Or?
I knew my whole basketball, my hands had gone. I was staying up late. I couldn't run as well as I used to. All of the things was just falling apart. But I was in such deep denial that I was like, hey, it's somebody else's problem. It ain't mine. Isn't that so? Yeah. Yeah. So that's the disease though, Pete, you know? But it is also human. It's like human frailties. And
right.
It's also, my life was like, I had so much trauma in my case. The case that I went to the Supreme Court with, Haywood versus the NBA, there was a lot of trauma that was buried down there.
What do you mean trauma? Like,
because,
anxiety, is that it? Is it?
Well, no, because I was being treated so differently. When I decided to fight this case for players to come in early and for me to come into the NBA early, I mean, my first injunction was, you know, you got a 10-game injunction. I sat in Seattle and I spent a lot of time with Rick Welsh.
Yeah, he was the PR guy.
No, he was the ball boy.
He was the ball boy then.
Okay.
He became the PR guy.
Became the PR guy.
Then he became Big Honcho.
Big Honcho with the
NBA.
At the NBA.
Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And the Warriors.
And he's the Warriors.
In the Warriors.
Yeah, he was my ball boy because, listen.
And his sister was Nancy.
Yes.
And she became PR girl. Yeah, I'm into Seattle.
Seattle. So listen, when I got to Seattle and signed the contract, I'm looking for guys on the bench, you know, like, where's the suits? You know, like suits you have on.
Mm-hmm.
It was Lenny Wilkins. He was a player coach.
Mm-hmm.
Rod Thorne was the assistant
coach.
He was a player coach.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Mascheri was the associate coach, and he was a player. And so I was there like, wow, these old guys.
They hang on forever. These guys.
They didn't hang on, but it was just the idea that they were old, and I was 20. So, and Rick was 16. So we hung out.
Yeah, with Rick. Isn't that something?
Ain't that something? So, and then when I have an injunction, and I would have to stay in Seattle because I couldn't travel with the team or anything, and then I would get an injunction to play, and then when I got on the floor, they would throw things and yell, you know, go back to college. What are you doing? You're messing up everything. And then you had the old heads who were the NBA guys, the current Wilt Chamberlain, all those guys. They didn't accept me into the union because I hadn't won my case.
Right.
So I went through all of that process, and when I got to Chicago, we were playing the Chicago Bulls. Chet Walker sued me, and the Bulls sued me for $600,000 in 1970 because Chet Walker was on the end warming up, and he said he hurt his ankle. And so they said Spencer Haywood is this distraction.
Oh my God.
So they sued me for that one. And then when I got to Cincinnati, they threw me out into the snow and said, you know, this injunction read that you must be out off the grounds in which this arena sat on. So they put me out.
So they just made up rules as they went along.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was a battle, you know?
Yeah.
And the NBA was trying to protect their farm system, which was the NCAA.
Sure.
And so the NCAA was feeding the NBA a lot of crap and saying that if he wins this case, we are out of business because our guys won't stay in college and it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, to some degree, they were correct.
To some degree.
Guys didn't even go.
They didn't even go.
So many of them.
Yeah. But it leveled off, you know. But I had that problem, and then growing up in Silver City, Mississippi, where there was so much racism, so much hate, and so much anger. And I lived in a Klan city, a Klan town. And so we went through so much stuff as kids, trauma. And
really? I mean, they'd harass you? They would?
No, they would hang you, kill you, do whatever.
They would hang you.
Because he was in Silver City, Mississippi. And that's in the Delta of Mississippi. And that's not like a place that you want to be. But that's where we were, and we picked cotton from sunup to sundown. It was hard work, but you only could make $2 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've wondered for many years, like, so you're from that small town, mm-hmm. and you've got 9 brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. and you've got no money, and you got
nothing.
How in the world did you learn how to play basketball? Where did you learn that? You didn't have a cord.
We didn't have a cord.
Didn't have anything.
Didn't have anything.
So how did you learn that?
How do I learn to play basketball? Was my first basketball was a ball that my mother made for the boys to play with. It didn't bounce. It was made out of a crocus sack.
Sure.
And you stuff it with, you know, towels, whatever you have. And then you say, bop, bop, and you make the pass or the shot.
Shot to where?
We shot it in a barrel ring.
You had a barrel.
Yeah.
Bop, bop.
Bop, bop, into the barrel.
All right.
And you never could miss.
Or
it was the stick on the side. You got to go up and knock it off.
So,
but listen, we would always do two bops, but my brother Andrew was a cheat, so he would always do three. So he brought in the Euro step.
He brought in the Louisiana step.
The Mississippi step.
Well, the Mississippi.
Yeah. So he then, and so we finally got a ball, and we finally got our backboard up, and we got a rim, just our rim.
What age?
I was like 12 when we got the real basketball. And
a real ball.
The real ball. Vault. V-O-L.
Voight. The Voight.
Voight. Voight.
Voight.
Voight.
Yeah.
Voight basketball.
I used to say null and void.
Null and void. And it had a patch on it, Pete, because it was a used ball.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But it bounced?
Yeah, it bounced. Yeah.
So
it had a little knot on it, so don't worry about the bounce this way or that.
Yeah.
But you were good. And so we played in our yard, and then I went off to, because there you have, like, the grades are, like, from first until seventh or eighth grade, you would stay in the same Dust Bowl school. It's like a single.
In your town, you had to go to another town?
No, it was in my town, but it was, like, 3 miles away, which is no big deal because you walked everything or had a mule and you were good. But so we played there, and so I finally start hitting my stride because my brothers before me had played and they were good. And so I get to the big game. I'm 13 and I go to the big game and I'm like, everybody's talking. He's going to be better than his brothers and stuff. So I get into this game at Louise Gym. We're playing inside of a gym finally. Oh my God. This is some incredible stuff here.
Right.
We got bleachers, we got fans, we got things going on.
Yeah, I know that feeling, yeah.
So it was so exciting. And then we get to the finals, and then I'm looking down the court there. I'm like, that's my brother on the other team, Andrew. He came back from high school to keep me down. And the team said, we'll forfeit, but we want to see the two boys play.
I'm not saying, yeah, see what happens. How much older was he, too?
He was 2 years old.
2 years old.
Yeah, so he...
How big was he?
He was 6'3 at the time.
Okay.
And he tore my butt up. But I protested the game, and I was like, hey, he's illegal. So they gave me the trophy, but it wasn't like a good trophy. It was like a, you know...
That's funny.
It's like some, you know, some shit that he didn't like, oh, well, I still beat you, you know?
Right.
So that was my first time. And then it all hit me. Basketball was like, wow. And then I started playing every day, all day, whenever we were working in the fields. I played, we had a court in a yard.
Okay, so you'd go there and play.
Yeah, just play. And then we had a gym at the high school, and my high school coach, at that time, I was in junior high, but he accepted me on the team. And he would pick me up, and I just loved that gym floor. I loved it. I mean, it was like I found a place for me. Because, you know, with all the brothers and sisters, you got to fight for food. You got to eat your food fast because, you know, like Andrew, like, just, I'll take this food. And I'd be skinny for the rest of my life.
Right. Like being in prison.
No.
The big guy take your food.
Take your food. It was like eating in prison with Andrew around. So
where is Andrew today?
Andrew's passed on from alcoholism.
From alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at what point and how did you get to Detroit? How did you, at what age? 16, is that?
No, I was 15 when I left Mississippi. My mom felt that I was going to be put in Parchman Prison. You know, Mose Ellison, I'm sitting over here in Parchman Farm. That's a prison.
Why?
Because what happened, if you are growing real fast and a big burly guy, they say, the farmer would say to you that, you know, did you look at somebody wrong or you did something wrong? And they put you in jail so that you stay on the farm. It was indentured slavery.
Really?
So they put me in jail for a night. And my mother said, my baby is not going to go down like this. So we had to raise money, the church and everybody, to get me out of town. So I couldn't leave from Silver City on the bus, Greyhound. I had to go to Belzoni, hang out around the store looking, and then get on the bus. And I rode the bus all the way to Chicago to meet up with my brothers in Chicago. Because when they would come home from Chicago, they had a wad of money and a brand new car. I said, I want to be rich like these guys. Mm. So I get up to Chicago, and he says, hey, that car we had was a rental car. And I said, well, what about all the money? Oh, it was fool's money. We had like 20 wrapped around ones. And I was like, wow. So I know I have a room here. No, you're sleeping on the floor here. And so, yeah. Lo and behold, my brother who was raised in Detroit, because he pulled a short straw with my aunt, and he was raised in Detroit. He was an all-stater in Detroit. He was at Bowling Green State University. He said to me, pack up all your stuff. We're going back to campus with me. He was over visiting the family. Mm-hmm. So I went over to Bowling Green with Howard Comeyes, Nate Thurman, all those guys.
Yeah, I know that team well.
Yeah, so I was just hanging around. And
really, you were around.
I was just a guy, you know, this little kid hanging around in the dorm. And they were like, when is he going to go to school? And so I couldn't go to the Bowling Green High School because I hadn't been integrated. I've lived a segregated life. So my brother and Sam Mims and all of those guys put together this. They had an all-star game at Kronk outdoor courts in Detroit. Mm-hmm. They had the high school all-stars, they had the college all-stars, mm-hmm. and they had the pros. So they brought me in, and I was showing off for Will Robinson. Hopefully he would like adopt me and raise me, whatever.
It's a great name. We'll get back to him.
Yeah. So what happened was, I get out there and I play in the first game against George Trapp and all of those guys. And first I knew I had them when they were saying in the locker room, I don't want to wear no Converse. I want Adidas shoes and I want Pro Kids and Puma. And I was like, my Converse I got a hole in the bottom.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll take the Converse, and I put on the shoes and we went out and played. I had like 27 points, 17 rebounds.
You remember the stats?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, because I had to play the next game. So because everybody was saying, oh, because my brother was running his mouth and other people were like, he's a phenom. You got to watch him. He's the best. Nobody knew about him. And so then they said, well, let him play against Cassie Russell, Bill Bunsen,
and
Oliver Darden, all
team.
Those guys from Michigan.
Yeah.
And so I played against those guys on the Michigan State team. And I did real well. I had like 17 points and 9 rebounds. So they said, he ain't that good. Why don't you let him play against the pros? And Dave Bing said, put him on my team. And I played against Reggie Harden, John Tresvant, John Barnhill, Chico Vaughn, all those guys, you know.
More, yeah.
And I did real good in that. And that's when Will Robinson said, I'm going to adopt you and you can stay with me. And we're going to try to get you in school and make it work out. So they brought my mother up to sign the adoption papers.
Yeah, I didn't know he adopted you.
That's my dad.
You know, I saw it written somewhere. I said, they don't know who he is. That's not his dad. That's his coach.
No, it's my dad, too.
I knew Will very well.
Yes, I know. This is family. This is all of us. This
unbelievable.
Is our family. So, and Will enrolled at Pershing High School.
He should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way.
Should be, yeah. So, he enrolled me at Pershing High School, and I lived with the Bell family, Ida Bell, because they have the joint adoption. And I remember I used to run all the time with Will because he would drive me around listen, take me over to Motown and see what's going on over there, see what's going on. Because I didn't know nothing. I'm a country boy. I'm like, he was just teaching me, you know, Ella Fitzgerald on the music. I'm like, who is that? Why are we listening to B.B. King? You know, because I'm a blues guy now.
Okay.
And he's listening to Ella Fitzgerald and John Coltrane. And I'm like, who are those people?
Right.
You know?
And so, he coached Mel Daniels. Who's the other?
Ralph Simpson.
I mean,
he also coached
Doug Collins in
Doug
college.
Yeah.
So he was really like, he was, I got a quick story. I know we only got
We got time.
All right. So, I'm at Isaiah Thomas's Hall of Fame. We're working together at NBC.
Yeah.
So we're at the Hall of Fame. We're in the first row because NBC and Isaiah, and I'm with my wife, now my ex, you know, and there's your coach, you know, there he is.
That's Will and Isaiah
Will is sitting next to us. So my wife gets up to walk away to go someplace, and Will's like, and he's following her, you know.
Yeah.
I said, hey, Will. What's up? You know, what's up with that? He goes, hey. He says, I might be 90, but I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead yet. Is that him?
That's it.
Oh, my God. I was on the floor laughing.
So, Pete, what happened was, you know.
That's the woman that was in Allen's.
Back to Allen's.
Back to Allen's.
Yes. Yeah. What street was that on?
34th.
Okay.
34th Street and.
So Will introduced me to the team because I had been practicing with him individually. He said, boys, we've been playing as mules. We got us a goddamn horse here. And we're going to ride this son of a bitch all the way to the state championship.
He said that.
And I was like, I'm the horse?
Right?
Yeah, because I'm a farm boy.
Yeah.
I know my mule was like, he was lazy. He didn't, you had to hit him in the head sometime. You know, come on, let's go pull the plow. But a horse, he's like, he's running. That's right. Why we got transportation was through our horse. So I was like, yeah. And so, you know, the city of Detroit had a drought for the Class A state championship for 35 years. From the city,
mm-hmm.
a team. So we broke that city record and we won this Class A state championship. So Will was just glorious about that whole journey.
And what year were you in then?
1967.
No, I mean, you're in school.
That was my senior year.
That was your senior year, so you won.
Yeah. And then they had this guy, this young professor named Wayne Dyer. You know, the writer. Wayne Dyer. He took me under his arm for years because I had to learn to have my chin up, and because I had been beat down so badly in the South, you couldn't look at nobody in the eye. You had to look at the floor, so I had to get out of that habit. And so I had a team around me.
And he did that why?
Because I just through Will. Wayne Dyer was a professor at our Persian High School.
Wayne said,
it's my pupil. I want to take care of him. So he was my guy going through the whole educational process. Will put me in ballet so I would have balance, put me in swim for endurance.
Unbelievable.
I was this.
They were molding you.
They was molding this person, you know. So it was just a beautiful journey, and I learned to read and write because I didn't learn much in Silver City because we had to close the schools down to harvest the cotton and plant the cotton. So I was lacking in education, so I had to catch up and try to get that B average so I could go and with the balance of my earlier years to go to a major university.
So then you went to Trinidad?
No, I didn't go to Trinidad at first.
Where'd you go first?
I went to the University of Tennessee as the first black person there.
I never knew that.
And so I went to the university, signed with the University of Tennessee because my family was still in Mississippi and they wanted to see me play, but they hadn't seen me play in Detroit. Right. So I said, well, this way I can go to Mississippi State in Mississippi and the University of Mississippi and they can see me play.
Uh-huh.
at the Tennessee. And so Mr. Rupp, who had just lost Kentucky, had just lost to five blacks with Texas Western.
So 67 we're talking about.
Yeah.
He lost in 66.
Yeah. So he was saying, I'm supposed to have the first black player superstar in this group. And so there was a pissing contest. And Will said, let's get the fuck out of here. I'm going to take you someplace where you're really going to love. It's close to Denver, close to Albuquerque. So I didn't look at the map. So he said, I go to a junior college. We go 1 year, maintain a B average, and come back. And maybe we'll
get to... How would he know about that place at that time?
Because Mel Daniels, he sent Mel to Trinidad, and he sent Ira Hodge.
Ira Hodge, too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he said...
And then they both went to New Mexico.
New Mexico.
Right.
So I was talking to Bob King. Bob King says, Coach, we're going to take you in after the first freshman year. So I went down to Trinidad, which was 420 miles from Albuquerque, 360 miles from Denver. So all you do is study, play basketball.
Yeah.
It was the perfect place for me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they said we're putting together a Olympic trial team because we don't want to be, they don't, the Olympic committee don't want to be sued by anybody by being left out. So they had the NIA, they had the NC2A, three or four teams there, mm-hmm. and they took us all into Albuquerque,
mm-hmm.
and Jerry Tarp was my coach.
Really?
Yeah. So we went into Albuquerque. Now, Pete, all I'm thinking about, man, I'm going to get me some gear, Olympic trial gear, come back to Detroit and say, hey, I tried out.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, when they was picking the team, they says, our guy, the second pick we were going to use, they had JoJo first, and they said, the second pick, they're picking Spencer Haywood. I'm like, oh! Because they were cutting. This is who they cut. They cut Pete Maravich from the team.
Yeah.
They cut Calvin Murphy from the team.
Yep.
They cut Rick Mount.
Yeah.
They put
all the top players.
They put Dan Issel as an alternate.
Right.
I'm like, what about me? And Hank Iverson something there.
Isn't that something?
And that he said, this is the horse that we can ride to the gold medal.
He used that expression too?
Well, no, he was just saying this is the player.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so, I was always wondering how you made it through and those guys got cut.
Yes.
But I know.
I really turned it out at the trials. I mean, I was playing way out of body shit. You know, I was really out of my body just playing. It was the biggest thing, and I was playing against all of the best players, and I was trying to show them that, you know, y'all missed out. You should have kept me at Tennessee.
Mm.
And I didn't want to go to Kentucky because Mr. Rupp wasn't quite ready for me to be there.
He wasn't
ready for me. So, and I was, you know, I felt like slighted, so I was really performing way above my talent.
Who, besides Issel, who were the big men that you had to go up against?
Well, we had Dan Issel, we had Tom Bowinkle, we had a lot of guys didn't go. You know, Kareem boycotted.
Right.
And Wes Unseld and Elvin Hayes signed their pro contract, so they was ineligible because we didn't take pros back then.
Okay.
And, so we had a lot of big men in the game, but I outshined everybody, and I could run all day because.
And you were 19.
Yeah, I was 18 when I got 18. There, and I turned 19.
While you were in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, yeah.
You win a gold medal. First of all, what was that like? Kai was coming from a small town in Mississippi.
Detroit stopover. And
you win a gold medal.
And I'm on the podium, and when they put that gold medal on my neck, I flash back to 4 years ago. I was basically a slave in Mississippi. And now I'm a gold medalist. And they were running off my numbers, like, he broke the record in scoring. He's got the highest field goal percentage in the history of the Olympics. He's got the most rebounds. He got the most blocked shots in the history. And I'm like, me? I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
I was out of body, you know?
Right.
I could be down
on the farm right now.
Right.
And I'm on a podium.
Parchment farm, too.
Parchment farm.
Yeah, that's the prison.
Yeah, I get it now. I never heard of it. Now I get it.
Yeah, so, but I just started crying, and JoJo, stand up like a man. Don't be crying on the stage. But I was flashing back to my whole family history of, like, going through all of that stuff. 3 years ago, I was basically a slave, and now here I am, an American hero. That is,
and you were because there was so much, controversy at those Olympics. John Carlos,
Tommy Smith.
It's like,
and then they were going to take our passports too, if we had just thought about doing anything. Avery Brundage decided, I'll take your passport, and you won't get out of Mexico. And Will Robinson flew in from Detroit.
Oh, really?
And he was by my side, like, you're going to get through all of this. This is the big chance. And when we get back to Detroit, we got something special for you, And I didn't know what was going on at that point. When I won the gold medal and we were just so happy, then we get to Detroit and Mayor Kavanaugh was there from Detroit, and Governor George Romney, the governor of Michigan, and they said, well, we want you to come back to the University of Detroit. And the alumni from the University of Detroit said, Will Robinson is going to get the job in your junior year. So I signed.
They promised that.
So I signed.
Not in writing, though.
Not in writing, because the NCAA, you can't do nothing. So I then.
Vitale was the coach?
No.
No, who was the coach?
Bob Callahan.
Oh, Callahan.
He was retiring.
He was retiring. So, okay.
So Bill was going to come in and replace him.
I got it. Okay.
And so I came to the University of Detroit with the idea that Will Robinson would be the coach. Ralph would come.
Ralph Simpson would be
on my team.
Right.
George Gervin, all of the guys in the city, we had kind of round up, players.
Yeah.
And we were trying to sneak Rudy out of Michigan.
Rudy Tom Donovan.
He was like, nah, that whole scheme, I don't know how y'all going to do this. Because we were saying we were going to be the UCLA of the Midwest. And it blew up. And so then that's when the ABA came calling. They said, we didn't get...
I'm going to stop you before you go to ABA.
Yeah.
So you and I talked about this once before. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember. When you were on the Olympic team, you came into the Garden, Madison Square Garden?
Yes.
Okay. So I remember, I was there for that.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know who you were.
Nobody did.
Okay. So you played against the Knicks.
I played against Willis and the Knicks.
Yeah. And I remember you coming down on the break, and you dunked over Willis.
Willis.
And I was like,
who is this guy?
I was like the kids in Rucker Park when Julius used to dunk and they'd come running out of the stands.
Yes.
I like got up and started doing a dance. I was like,
who is this guy?
You remember that dunk?
Yes. Because the floor in the Garden was like springy. And we had been playing overseas. We had played in Russia, Yugoslavia, and in Finland.
So this was before the Olympics or after?
Yeah, this was before
you went to Mexico. Okay.
And so we came back to New York to scrimmage the Knicks.
Oh, okay.
And then we were going into Cincinnati to scrimmage with Oscar, and then we would go into Mexico City.
Okay.
So that was the whole journey.
That was.
I was.
I'm
like,
so glad you remember that.
Yeah, I was. I mean, that was the guard. The first time I've ever
put the dunk on Willis.
The dunk.
It was
whoa, shit.
What? All right.
Oh my God.
So go back to Detroit.
Yeah.
And so you played 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And you had great stats.
I was the outstanding college player of the year. Kareem was the MVP that year. And I was on the All-American team with Pete Maravich and Rick Mount and Calvin Murphy and Kareem. That was the All-American first team.
Did not realize that. Okay.
Yeah. And so what happened was the draft came about. The ABA was trying to go after Kareem. They didn't get him. Because he went to Milwaukee, so
yeah, and that's under Marks. The Nets underbid and could have had him, and they screwed up the bid.
They screwed up the bid.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Mike Storm,
Hannah's father.
Father.
Yes.
Said, well, let's go after the second best player. But we're going to have to usurp the NBA in their draft. So what we will do is we sign Haywood, and he do pretty good in the ABA for the first year. Then we will be able to get the Julius Irvins, the George Gervins, and all of those guys who are like, want to play ball right now.
Yeah.
So that's when he said.
And they had lost Connie Hawkins.
They lost Connie too.
Connie too, went to Phoenix.
Went to Phoenix.
Yeah, so they needed somebody like Connie, which was you.
You're right.
Yeah.
And so they brought me in and said, Ringsby and Mike was saying, you know, if you get maybe 10 points a game and maybe 7 rebounds, this will work. We will take all the players from the NBA before they get there.
And I know what you did.
Yeah.
I mean, what you did there is, I looked
30 points, 19 rebounds. 19.5 rebounds.
I looked it up.
Rookie of the year.
Yeah.
MVP of the league.
Right.
MVP of the All-Star game.
Right.
Leading scorer, leading
rebound. Okay, so what I looked up was, how many players in NBA history ever did what you did?
It was Wilt.
Wilt and Wes Unseld.
Oh, wow.
Only two. So three in the history of professional sports.
Wow.
I told you something.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, how about
I thought
that?
Wilt, but I just threw him
yeah,
in.
Yeah, no, Wilt, it was Wes Wilt Unseld. And Unseld. Yeah, how about that? Okay, so
it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I'll say. Okay. I'll say. So then, you hired Al Ross.
Yes.
And he looked into your contract and found out that so many, in those days, that's what they did for everybody.
That's what they did for everybody, yeah.
Deferred payments, annuities that you wouldn't get till you're 50.
I started age 50 to age 70 is when I got the annuity. If the stock market was still doing great, because it would only put $10,000 into the stock market. It was called a dog-off plan, Jeff Dog-off.
But that was big in those days.
That was a big deal. And so Al came in, young, aggressive, out of Michigan State, and had a good basketball
game. From Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn. We had a good basketball game,
Yeah.
So me and him could talk. We was like talking basketball. Yeah. And he
swore he could out-shoot anybody.
He could. Hey, that was my practice partner.
Yeah. No, I heard you.
Years. Me and him, we go at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Al came in and said, this piece of garbage, we're going to go in here. We're going to straighten this thing out. And so we go in to the Ringsby's. Al, listen, we can solve this problem. Haywood won't be missing any games if you just pay him what the contract is worth. He said, who the hell are you? He's got an attorney, and you are his attorney? I tell you what you do. You take your Jew ass out of here and take that nigga with you.
Yeah, I knew they talked that trash.
They talked that shit, man. Yeah. And so we left and we said, we're going to get this. We're gonna pay him back.
Right.
So then we signed with Seattle, and Sam Schulman said, I'm going to play him. I'm not going to wait. I'm going to play him right now. And Al was like, we're taking this to the bank. We're going to war. And that's my guy. And so during the Supreme Court case, I moved in with Al.
I knew that.
Yeah, I moved into his home.
His family.
Yeah, his family. Yeah. And so then Al and I, after we would like go through all of the case and what we're going to do, we go to the gym. Mm. And that's when me and him was like doing our bonding, because it wasn't about law. It was about two dudes playing ball now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Al could shoot.
Yeah.
And I would like let him, because I could block it, but I wasn't going to like just block everything.
That's funny.
And because, Al was a competition guy. Yeah. So we would compete and we would just sit down, act like we was like kids in the playground.
Man. So that went on for a while, a court case. Now I had to go to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Schulman had to
He put $1.7 million up on that legal case.
He bankrolled his whole thing. And
he said to me, I'm going to teach you about Jewish loyalty.
Really?
Yeah. And that was the whole process of like, I gave you my word and I'm going to hold it. And I want you to hold to your word that you will always fight for me and this team.
I knew him pretty well. I won't get into how we knew it, but anyway. So he takes you to all the way to court, all the way to Supreme Court. You make a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wait for their decision for the Supreme Court, right? It's a settlement.
Well, it was a settlement, but basically it was a win.
Definitely a win. And then he had to pay. I heard he had to pay Denver like $500,000 to get out of that
old contract.
Right. And then he gave you a contract.
He gave me a contract, a real contract.
Right, a real.
Al negotiated a contract for $1.7 million, and it was like I think $250 per year. And you know, previously, 2 years before, Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell was worried about the $1 more.
Exactly.
Yes.
$100,001.
Yes.
different times. So you go to Seattle and when did you have a falling out with Al?
I think Al and I started partying when first of all, Al wanted to not he wanted to receive the checks. I wanted to get my own checks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So Al wanted to receive all of the checks.
Yeah, we don't.
And
like
my family was like, you know, you can't just give up your checks like that. But we dragged on and we tried to make it work. And then we started getting those Mercedes from a guy that Al had. He had a dealership. And I was telling Al, man, you know, you got John Brisker, you got Spencer, you got all of us under contract. You don't need to have a bigger car than we did. He got a big limo, Mercedes. That was Al, you know.
No question.
It's Al. So he got the limo, Mercedes, and he liked it a little bit. That's gosh.
Yeah, we're 6'9", 6'8", Jim McDaniel's 6'11".
Yeah, but it was happiness. And then, you know, my people, Will Robinson was like, I got this company. I want you to go with Ed Bell, who was a judge, Bell Brown, and those people out of Detroit.
That's right.
So I hated to leave Al. I really did, because Al and I, we are personal friends. That's why me leaving his organization hurt him so bad, because we had went through hell.
Right.
I mean, that case was a real tear on both of us.
And he had assembled a dream team of lawyers.
Everybody.
No question.
He had everything in place.
Right.
And that was one of my other regrets, you know, that I left with LFL, because again, here I am with the Lakers and I'm having my problems.
Could have used him.
And
right
I'm
there.
Looking at Al, because Al was the guy that could have said, Spencer, I'm taking you home.
Yeah.
And you can't fuck up like this.
Yeah.
So I was always looking at him on the sideline.
No, I understand. It's a shame. We've talked about it over time about getting that relationship back together. I know he was really hurt when you went in the Hall of Fame and you didn't thank him.
Well, I invited Al.
Yes.
I sure did.
Yes,
I invited
I
Al, and I had it all in the speech, and I was like, well, Al, but he called Jerry Colangelo, and he talked to Jerry and them, so they were like all upset. Everybody was upset about that Al, and I was like, well, but this is the guy, because I had it all planned out. I had the speech. I had everything.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I got the receipts.
Really?
I got the text. I got the receipts to Al saying, "Al, get ready. The family."
Why didn't he come? I forget. Why?
Well, because I guess the hall was a little upset that he was being a little
Yeah.
You know, you're speaking out.
Tough to deal
yeah.
with.
Yeah. So, and I said, well, you know, I don't want to bring no more pressure on me because I've been passed up for 3 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm ready to go in.
It's calm.
Yeah. I want to keep it calm. But I sure was hurt when I did my speech and there was no L because I had this big plan. Talked to L. I said, L, you come in front and row, you're going to be sitting right in the front row because you are the man. And Dawn, I said, I want you there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I talked to him both beforehand.
So I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
I knew he'd invited him, but I didn't know why he didn't come. But now I'm going to cut to the chase. So in the last how many months, your relationship has been redeemed, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, he is doing a book about, you know, his life and the case and everything. And then, you know, I felt bad when you Google up the case, you see Spencer Haywood, Sam Schulman, but no Al Ross.
Mm.
So that's where my problem came in. So I said, Al, I want to talk in your book. You can do what you say, what you feel about me, but I want to be there to explain to the audience that's going to read this book what a great man you are and what your family mean to me.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's what I did.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, I'm really glad to hear that.
It was good. It was good therapy for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure for
him. But I did.
For him too.
I did say, when I was going through that problem in L.A., why didn't you call on me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the kind of relationship.
Do you think he knew?
Yeah, he knew. Yeah. I was terrible.
You were just out there.
Yeah. And I was always looking at him at the sideline, and you know, guys, and Magic would throw it in. You know, Michigan State, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, he ain't saying nothing to me. Fuck him.
Right.
Arrogance, you know.
No, wait, yeah. I've been there.
You know what I'm saying, man.
I've been there.
This is real conversation we're having.
So Spencer, when you were in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you came in and, you know, I'm not going to get into that whole savior bit and all that
Wasn't
stuff.
Wasn't that crazy?
It was crazy because, you
because
know.
Because I said.
go on.
No, they came. You guys said to me, what are you here to do? I said, I'm here to save the Knicks.
Right.
I'm the savior.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, and all of them, Phil Jackson, like, we got championships. You don't have nothing.
Right.
I blew it.
Yeah, whatever. But they did bring you in as a savior because the team was falling apart.
Yeah, they was all
old. They were already ready to trade anybody. They would have traded anybody for Kareem.
Right.
Anybody on the team that Milwaukee didn't want.
Didn't want.
Yeah. But, so it also bothered me, you know, Phil Jackson, okay, he's coming to you and saying, hey, you know, we won championship. So, well, you know what, Phil, you really weren't a big part of that.
We was roommates.
You were?
Me, him, and we would rotate. Bill Bradley and Phil Jackson.
Did he share any smoke with you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So my first joint that I ever had in my life, I'm on a cab ride to LaGuardia with him, you know, for going to the Knicks are taking the plane out and he hands me a joint.
Yeah.
And I go, what's this? He says, well, you know, take a
puff.
I gave my first joint. But my point is, so you're there, you're having good years, but you're not, you know, they're not winning.
They're not winning, so
you were the guy we were going to point finger.
We're going to point the finger.
And I had heard you were, you know, you were smoking and whatever. I thought it was more, truthfully, but.
Yeah, but I mean, I was not the coke guy yet, but because.
Not at all.
I mean, I told you earlier, I said I dabbled, but I wasn't it wasn't like. Me,
it wasn't
because I was in the fashion world and the whole other side of my life. But Phil and I and Neil Walk, we would buy weed together.
Neil Walk, my man.
So we would buy our stash, you know? We were the guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So I kind of heard that Neil and I were pretty tight.
Okay.
Up until he died. I was seeing him in Phoenix, taking him out.
In Phoenix,
So anyway, they trade you, and I'm just saying to myself, wait, you know, we talked about it before. They traded you for Eugene Short, and No, wait a minute.
In the first round.
No. We're going to Seattle.
Seattle traded me to the Knicks.
Okay. Right.
And so they.
Let's stop there. So okay. Seattle traded you to the Knicks for Eugene Short and a number one pick.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say you had a pretty damn good career going.
I was like, yeah, all pro.
In Seattle,
yeah.
Why would they trade you for so little? Eugene Short was a bust.
Well,
He wasn't Purvis Short. He wasn't his brother.
I know. But what happened was the town, because I had sided with John Brisker.
ABA.
And I thought he should be, you know, and it was part of Al's team and
yes.
all of our team.
Yep.
So I thought he should be playing more. So Russ was in favor of doing more, and we was trying to work this out with John. And then other guys on the team says, well, you know, we can get Spencer out of here. And I won't say who the guys were, but
why not?
They had, no, because it hurt their feelings.
But if they wanted,
I know, but I'm not.
I'm gonna have to think about that.
So no, you have to think on that one. I ain't gonna tell you.
No. So you're talking about Seattle people.
Seattle.
Why would they want to get rid of you? I mean,
my Seattle teammates, because I had gotten so big in terms of publicity and everything, and they had infiltrated Russell, because I hurt my shoulder in the playoffs when we were playing against Golden State. We had made it through the Pistons, and then I hurt my shoulder.
In the second round,
I hurt the shoulder. I couldn't go. And so, I mean, my teammates really did a number on
me. Well, they're the first ones. I've always found that out. The teammates are the first one, or the second one. The coach is usually the first one to turn on you. Then the teammates.
Well, Russ didn't turn on me.
Okay, but, you know, my.
But let me tell you what happened.
Go on.
So I go into the office. And now you got to remember that I had went through the Supreme Court. Seattle loved me. My family was moved. I had moved my
great
brothers
city.
And sisters. All my family is up there. So I go in, and Russ is saying, I got an offer for a trade for you. And I was like so hurt that my teammates had betrayed me, because I protect the guys on that team. And Russ was like, I don't want to do it. But I was like angry at him for even bringing it to the table. So
yeah,
I said,
yeah, why would you?
Well, fuck
yeah. You could have said no before you told me.
Yeah. No, he didn't tell me, but he was telling me the trade beforehand.
I'm and saying that, but he could have said no about the trade, not told you anything.
I know. But then my feelings were hurt that with him, because we had a father-son relationship. Because I had gave up my position as a forward. I was the best forward in the league, and then I went to a center.
And he wanted to make you into a center. And yeah. I always said, like, what?
I'm 6'8".
What
man.
Was that about?
I know it. Because I could do things that he did. I'd become a shot blocker, become a rebounder, and that would advance our team, because Jim McDaniels didn't work out.
Right.
So he said, well, you know, you got to be the guy that carried us if we're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole conversation. But when he put it on the table, I was like so outdone by it all. I was like, get me out of here. I can't be around these guys. I don't want to be around you. And my feelings were outwardly not good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I ended up in New York.
All right. But again, they gave you up for nothing.
For nothing. I know.
Gave up the best forward turned center, made the playoffs.
Yes.
You had the stats.
Yeah.
I still don't get it. So I'm always thinking, because did they know something
no.
about it?
No.
You come to New York.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make the playoffs. I always thought they knew something.
No.
I always thought, because they traded you for Josie Merriweather.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's fine. He's decent. But come on. For the savior? What the hell?
Yeah.
So I never understood that. Is there anything?
Yeah. Well, that and also the contract that the Knicks put on the table for me, and
what?
Larry Fleischer was working that whole process. They wanted me in New York really bad, so. But I didn't.
Well, what about leaving New York?
Leaving New York, I was like really hurt, because I was leaving my family, you know. That was my anchor. because I didn't know players in New York like I had in Seattle. We in Seattle, we hung out like this group or everything. Mm-hmm. But in New York, everybody was like, Bill Bradley was writing his memoir.
Right, they all went different ways.
Yeah, everybody was different ways. So I was like a lost child until Iman got into my life. And then I was like, had my whole family, because I had her family. The Somalians was living with us as well. Mm-hmm. Her sisters and her brother lived with us as well. So that was a breakup again.
Right, but she came with you. You went to New Orleans, then mm-hmm. they.
Well, we commuted back and forth with each other from there, but then
They moved to Utah.
Then they moved to Utah, and I didn't report. And so I forced the trade. I said that because she wanted to work in LA, she could keep modeling, she could keep acting and doing her work. So I wanted to get to LA. And so I didn't report. And I remember for years, Adrian Dantley like hated me for that.
Because he was traded to you.
He was traded to Utah.
And here we are.
Here we are
in Utah. But at least in my
yeah, well, that's a balanced trade there.
Yeah, at least there finally was a balance there. Like I don't.
Yeah.
But then.
But I was after New York, I became a moody player, you know, mm-hmm. and a guy that would sit and read books on the back of the bus and not participate with my guys. So I was not, you know. I was hurt by basketball for a while.
And is that the reason you turned to drugs, or is
no? I turned to drugs because I was, maybe it was. I don't know, but
I was giving you an out.
No, that ain't no out. I made that choice.
Yeah, you know?
It was a bad choice. So I lived with that throughout my life. And it's one of my regrets, but it's in my past. If I didn't have the drugs, I wouldn't be here as the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. So whatever happened, I had to go through these journeys to be where I am now. I had to fall to grow, mm-hmm. to grow up, because I'm the youngest player to ever play in the NBA. So I never grew up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, you know, if... it's been written before, it's been talked about before, about you falling asleep during practice and all mm-hmm. that stuff.
I did.
Yeah, you know, it's been written, we know that. Mm-hmm. And then the Westhead, poor Westhead, you know, kicking you off the team mm-hmm. and all that. And then them not voting you a playoff share mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Have you gotten past all that?
Oh God, yes. I had to get past that. And one of the things that happened before I got to practice that day, I had fallen asleep at the wheels in my car.
Didn't know that.
I had fell asleep at the wheel of the car, and I woke up and they were just blowing the horn. Get up, let's go. And I was like, oh boy. So I drove to practice, and mm-hmm. I get to practice, and then we were doing stretching, which right. I brought to the team. I'm like, we got to stretch, we got to do all these things. And then all of a sudden, I fall asleep. Jamal is over there hitting me, wake up. So I'm like, well, you know. And I fell asleep at practice because I had been out and I just ran from partying, Quaaludes in my body because I was trying to get the cocaine down. And so that was that.
Vicious cycle.
Vicious. I mean, that's that, you know, the hamster. The hamster.
The hamster, that's good.
Yeah.
Did you ever talk to Paul Westhead about...
Yeah, Paul Westhead, when I first seek sobriety, I came in my fourth step, and you have to make amends in the 12th step. So I came to Westhead years ago.
Right.
I made amends with him, and Kareem invited me out, and I made amends with him, because I felt I just betrayed that team so badly, because they put so much into me, and the guys... You know, and I said some bad things because I didn't get a full share, playoff share.
Did you get anything?
I got like a third. But then they were looking out because they knew that if I had got a playoff share, there was more drugs to buy. So if that's what they say, I said, hey, I mean, right. you saved my life, because I was falling asleep at the wheel. Right. I was doing all these things. My life was in peril.
But then
I went to Italy, man.
And
those Italian people loved me so much, and they loved all of the anger and fear and hate out of me. That put me on the right track.
But you were still doing drugs,
correct? No, I wasn't.
Oh, you weren't. So I read somewhere that you really didn't stop doing drugs until after you left the Washington team.
No, I didn't. I mean, I had one fall in Washington.
One relapse in Washington?
Relapse in Washington when my wife had an automobile accident. Iman was in his automobile accident. It's when I relapsed. Mm. And then I came home. I quit. I said, I can't live this life anymore. I can't play ball and do drugs anymore. So I need the help. And that's when I started seeking help. And then I realized I couldn't stay in New York and be sober. So that's when Iman and I made a decision that I can go to live in Detroit and enjoy my family in Detroit. And she would let me raise my daughter with me.
Really?
So that's when I took my daughter with me to Detroit.
Really?
And I raised Zuleika with my wife.
But the marriage was over.
The marriage was over, but we've always been friends.
Sorry to hear that it was over. I was sorry to hear that, because I enjoyed watching you.
Yeah, we were a fun couple. It was special. So that's my life. And,
that's it. And if you were a voter on the Hall of Fame, would you have voted for you, knowing everything? And I understand Jerry Colangelo's rules, which I don't agree with, but would you have voted for a player who put out a hit on his coach? Or
well, I didn't put a hit out. That was
bullshit.
At that time, it was bullshit, because I had a book, and Wilt Chamberlain had said he had 500,000.
And he made a mistake.
He made a mistake.
Yeah,
I made the same mistake. That's all that shit was.
Okay.
Because I was with my publishers with Amistad, and everybody was like, you got to have a buzz. So I went for a buzz.
Exactly.
And
I
never felt good about that. And it always came back to betray me, you know? That's not me.
Absolutely.
That's not who I am.
They were so wrong for steering you in that direction.
I know. But, you know, back at that period, Wilt Chamberlain had to say he slept with 5,000 women.
I don't even
And it didn't make sense.
No, 20,000. 20,000.
So we were all, you know, like trying to get recognition.
It would have been 20,001, but I beat him out for a girl in Memphis.
Okay. Yeah. So I would have voted for me, because I've contributed to the game so much, but that was a false. And Jerry and everybody know that that's not my character.
Okay, but you know, it's still out there, though. So everything I read, there's always something there. It's
like, I know, but that's part of life, and that's part of that's part of my journey.
Yeah. Well, I hate Wikipedia, you know, like stuff.
I hate it too, but what the fuck am I going
to
do?
Yeah. I'll try to straighten it. Maybe this will help.
Yeah.
Maybe this will help. I'm glad to hear you. Respond to that.
Yeah.
Well, Spencer, it's really, really been a pleasure. You know, it's like,
it's been a long time.
We've been having
this conversation for what, 50 years? But we never had it.
No.
When we had it today.
We were around it. We have
this conversation today.
Thank you for listening to Hoop du Jour with me, Peter Vesey. Presented by the National Basketball Retired Players Association. You can listen to all Hoop du Jour interviews by searching Legends Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.